Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Jocelyn. Welcome to April. I hope you're excited for the biggest video game adaptation happening this month, very soon. I'm excited.
Fallout, right. I was waiting for some sort of Sonic joke.
Yeah, of course. We're talking about Fallout.
Sonic, isn't it?
No. I was referencing Fallout, which premieres in 10 minutes as of this recording. Not to like seriously date and time code this recording, but...
I was going to say, okay, so we have to do the entire episode in 10 minutes then if we want to avoid spoilers.
Well, I mean, just don't look at Twitter.
I never do anymore.
No, that is healthy. That is healthy. Yeah. So that's a good way to live. And Fallout is definitely what I was saying. And we will talk about Fallout next episode. Next I know week, all the episodes drop.
I don't think that we're going to be able to get all the way through all the episodes. I don't even know if there's like 4 or 8 or 12 or 10. Or I have no idea. All I know is it's going to be too many.
Yeah, I think there are... I mean, these days it's 8 episodes. That's like the standard premium streaming number, but I don't know for certain. I think it is 8 episodes. But that being said, like, you know, we'll probably watch enough of it to get a feel for it, and it'll be spoiler free to a certain degree. It's not like we're going to say how it ends, although I'm sure it's...
I don't even know how it ends. I don't know Fallout. So I just think the trailers look really cool.
The trailers do look very cool. It's getting great reviews. So I can't wait to dive in closer to the weekend. So I'm excited.
Yeah. And speaking of diving into things, you also dove into Halo Season 2.
I did. we were talking about it pre-show, and it was one of those classics, like, this is show talk.
Yeah. I had to keep telling Ryan to shut up and move on.
It's true. It's true.
Because otherwise he was just going to do the whole show with me before we even got on here.
Yeah. I was trying to like, I didn't know how I felt about it until we had started talking about it, and clearly I felt things. I'm very passionate about the Halo season 2.
Thoughts and feelings, big feelings.
Yeah, and I mean, okay, so Halo season 2, if you remember my conversations about Halo season 1, it was basically like solid effort. You took a franchise that has like minimal story. The story is there to service, you know, dude with gun, shoot aliens, save the world or save a world.
Although it does have a pretty big like universe to pull from, because aren't there, there a whole bunch of Halo novels? Like it gets fleshed out outside of the game.
It does. There is a, and I you know, past Ryan is probably like, what are you talking about? There's so much lore to Halo. And past Ryan is right, as well as Jocelyn. There's a lot of novels I've read. Some of them, I can even pull a memory from my brain of like reading Halo novels in high school and having people like, what are you doing? It's like, well, I am reading Halo novels and it's a lot of fun. You should try it. And and they walked away. So, which is fine. That is a suitable response. There is more story to Halo, and even the games, like for what they present in the games, there is a lot of story there. And I think the first Halo game, it was really just, you know, very basic, you know, as a first game. And then when 2 came along, there was a lot more story to it. But all that said, the Halo seasons 1 and 2 do not pull from the video games Halo or Halo 2 for that matter. Okay. They are kind of leading there still. And I mean, for everyone at home, I've only watched 5 episodes. I'm 5 episodes into an 8 episode season. My understanding is that they do not get to adapting Halo in the season 2. So like, I guess that's not necessarily a spoiler. In my mind, it is a expectation check. So knowing that going in, you can kind of like shelve, if you are going to be disappointed by that, you can kind of put it up on the shelf and be like, hey, maybe next time.
Well, you say maybe next time, but yeah, they're not for sure getting renewed, right?
Nothing's been announced for a season 3. These days, if a show is doing... So it's kind of tough. My understanding with television is that like you're doing so good that you get a pre season announcement. So before this new season even launches, you're like, hey, we're doing a second season. It takes a lot of work to do TV. And speaking of Fallout, it got a, I'm pretty sure it got a season two announcement. There was something that got a season two announcement. I think it was Fallout. Avatar got a 2 and 3 season announcement, which is important because it was like, hey, we're going to adapt the whole thing. What a concept, you know, we're going to adapt the whole story instead of like stopping halfway through. So yeah, I am legitimately concerned that we've gone through two seasons of exploring what they call the Silver Timeline, which is a whole new timeline of Halo that they're setting up for the show.
Oh, honestly, before you go too far,
yeah.
So Halo season 1 and 2 are not even set in the same like universe and timeline as everything else.
No, yeah, they are their own thing. If you recall, remember the big controversy was that you saw Master Chief's butt and he had sexual relations with another character, which is not canon.
I was going to say, was it Cortana? But then I was like, no, wait, she doesn't have a body.
It was not Cortana.
Those are the only two characters I know that aren't the aliens.
Look, it was not the aliens. Okay. I can give you that as well. This is not that kind of show. So, yeah, like it is considered, they call it the Silver Timeline. Of course, they pull a lot of stuff from, you know, going back to the novels.
Well, yeah, I guess a different timeline or a different universe could be, you know, just the same, only a little different. But then at that point, it's like, why don't you just do the normal one? Like, why be weird about it?
I don't know. It's something that I think Disney did with Star Wars, where they had this opportunity to be like, what do we do with all this extra stuff? And I know a lot of people got upset when they basically said, hey, this is canon. Like, here, we're going to lay out what's canon and what isn't. We're going to call it Legends. All the Legends stuff still exists. You can still enjoy it, but it is not part of the canon, the focus canon that we're building, which includes the original trilogy, the prequels, and some animated stuff, and building from there. But what Halo's done here is, I would assume the reason they did this is because when they did get to the video game portions, they could tell their version of the story properly adapted to television. If we look at The Last of Us as an adaptation on TV, that worked as a fairly straight adaptation of the story from the video game, because it was a very narrative-driven video game. But when you look at Halo, it's like they are going to need to tell more of a story when adapting even the first game. Because if they skipped the first game, people would be more upset. So maybe that's why they went with this new timeline, so that when they did get to the video games, they could bounce around a bit and kind of tell a more fleshed-out story without feeling trapped to do specifically the video game. Like, there are moments in Halo where it's just like driving point A to point B, which is, you know, it's not the same. When you put that to television, it's like a quick shot, right? So that all being said, like, this very much feels like a journey and a tease towards getting to Halo and then telling that story of what Halo is and what that conflict is on that ring, and then the overall story of like what that ring does, and then there's a larger story around that, and that is told in the first Halo game, and there have been, you know, hints of, you know, the great journey that the Covenant is trying to enact, and by doing the great journey to get to the rings, they are, you know, causing humanity's extinction, like, and that is all hinted towards that, and that is a big part of the video games. So the Covenant are there. The Covenant are the bad guys. And season two, kind of like, whereas season one was introducing the Covenant as the bad guys, season two, the Covenant are very much the bad guys. And they are showing up and doing more of the stuff we saw in the novels and Fall of Reach, where they are infiltrating planets and then glassing them, which is the act of basically shooting giant plasma rays and killing everything on the planet. And that was a big deal in the novels, as they sort of built up to the Halo rings, and you see that in this show, like the opening of episode one is this interaction between Master Chief and like an army of elites. And the action is like dialed up. They really nailed the action of Master Chief taking on the Covenant, the elites mainly is what we see so far in this season. So they've really nailed the action. It's very hand to hand. There is some gunfire stuff, which is what Halo's known for, but for the majority of the combat, it's honestly a lot of like Master Chief in his armor or Master Chief in no armor. So I guess we'll just call him John, fighting these giant elites hand to hand, like with knives and stuff. And it's an experience that you barely get in the video games. So they've kind of gone for this like fight choreograph where you have like a human person actor like fighting giant CG monsters. And I mean,
is that as great as it sounds?
And that's the thing, like sometimes, like, okay, and this gets to the point of like, who is this show for? So I'm watching it and I'm like, oh man, this is so cool. We see Master Chief fighting these aliens like hand to hand, and it's like super action, it's like John Wick style. And then Ashley probably walks in and is like, what is this nonsense? Like, you have this like 7-foot dude, like army dude, no armor, with just like a knife, and he's fighting these giant aliens who have like laser swords. It's like, is this like a ripoff of Star? What is happening here? So I think the Halo show is for people who have a connection to Halo. And I know that sounds weird to say, but it is that type of adaptation. This is not The Last of Us.
Well, no, I mean, like, the thing is, I was going to say, like, so for comparison with Last of Us and now coming up with Fallout, like, I don't have any connection to those games, but I very much enjoyed The Last of Us TV show. Like, I thought it was fantastic, and I'm really looking forward to the Fallout TV show, but I couldn't give any less of a shit about Halo.
Yeah, that's fine.
And I mean, like, I do partly blame you for that, because I'm like, after your season one review, I was like, well, if this is how Ryan feels about this show, I'm going to hate it. So I'm just going to steer clear.
Yeah, so for me as a fan of Halo, like there is parts to enjoy. And I think anytime, well, this is going to sound obvious, but anytime the humans, the Master Chief, you know, the Marines are engaging and fighting against the Covenant, which is Halo, it is very interesting to watch. And it's not just action. It can be moments where characters are having conversations about the conflict, or, you know, setting up missions, like giving speeches about how they're going to defend Reach. That's all interesting as a Halo fan. But then there are moments where, like in season one, they wade into the politics of it a little bit, where it's like humans doing shitty human things when the extinction's at the doorstep. It's like, guys, why are we fighting about who gets to do what and who gets to take credit for which? And it's like, and hiding things from people and not taking advice from the dude who was literally there that saw the Covenant. It's like, well, I don't know, Master Chief, you might not know what you're talking about. We better not do that thing. And then what do you think happens? Bad stuff happens. It's like, I think part of Halo is, it, maybe it's a bit of a fantasy in this way, but like once the Covenant is like seen as a threat, humanity kind of like bounds together and works as a team to try to fight off this very aggressive enemy that is wiping them out. And I know from a video game perspective, it's like, okay, that makes the narrative super simple. You have the good guys, you have the bad guys. We can throw in a little bit of like, you know, conflict between them and some wavering on the Covenant side, but humanity, they're good. We are fighting the bad guys. And I think in the show, they introduce characters that are very much like, what's the word? Like sabotaging humanity's efforts to defend itself against this enemy that is clearly overpowering them outside of these four soldiers that are Spartans, right? So like from a story perspective, it's a little frustrating when they spend, you know, large portions of episodes where these characters are like just arguing while the Covenant is like slowly destroying them. And But then you get cool moments like Fall of Reach, where, you know, they're defending Reach, and there's these big battles.
This is one of the Halo lore moments that I am passingly familiar with, is Reach. So has that happened in the show now, or are they still building to that?
It did happen, yeah.
Okay. So that at least has happened.
Yeah, it happens about, I would say around episode 4 or 5, and there is a big moment where, you know, the Covenant attack Reach, and they build up to it a bit. And I think that's where that human conflict comes in, where there is a portion of, you know, of the humans on Reach that are sort of like not all in on defending it. But then once they focus on sort of the action and defending Reach, they do get to the point where it's like, okay, we're getting the Fall of Reach. This is interesting, but it's not the story directly from the games or the books or whatever. It is their version of it. And I did feel like it kind of ended with a bit of a, I mean, look, like it ends with the planet being destroyed, like it does in the books and the video games, but they need to get,
how they get there is different.
Yeah. How they get there is different, but they also need to obviously have characters survive, because they want to do more, I assume, because it keeps going. So, you know, they need to get those characters off of a doomed planet. And part of the story in the video game Fall of Reach and the novels is that, like, not many defenders survive. Like, I think it's the Pillar of Autumn, which is the one ship that sort of flies away with Cortana and Master Chief, and that's how they get to Halo. But all the Spartans die, except for the Master Chief, because he wasn't there, technically. But in this story, Master Chief is very much on Reach defending it. So, like, they're telling their version of the story, which is, I think, I understand why they decided to go that route. But yeah, so far, I don't think the next 3 episodes are going to, like, suddenly change this opinion, knowing how, like, sort of how it wraps up. But it just feels like I'm repeating myself, in the sense that I had the same feelings at the end of season 1 and even halfway through season 1, where it's like, okay, but at least eventually they have to do Halo. So I'm repeating that now, like, okay, now we have to do Halo. If we get a season 3, that's all, like,
yeah, I was going to say, I thought that season 2, the expectation was that, because there was that shot at the end of season 1, right? That,
yes,
was like, oh, Halo.
Yeah. And they played the song and it was, ah, Halo. That's the theme to Halo. I'm not going to sing it, but you did a great job.
Thank you.
No, and that, again, like at the end of season 1, it was like, that's the Halo. They show it. And throughout season 2, in the intro, they changed up the intro, so it ends with the Halo that you see at the end of season 1. And I thought, and the idea was very much like, hey, these things we've found, these keystones, is what's going to unlock the path to the first ring. And so far that plot point is kind of left to the wayside. Like, it hasn't really been touched very much. So, but then we knew they had to deal with the Fall of Reach and humanity sort of losing a lot of its footing on the, you know, in the outer rims of the galaxy. So they had some story to go, but I thought, based on the trailers, that they would kind of
move it along a little faster.
Yeah, get us to Halo. And my understanding is that, like, they don't get to that point, to the point where they are adapting the video game. Like, they might get to Halo, but they don't start the adaptation of the video game. So
then they could theoretically not get a season 3 and then have a Halo TV show that didn't have Halo.
Yeah. There is, you know, and I've seen the articles, there is a cliffhanger at the end of season 2, similar to how there wasn't a cliffhanger at the end of season 1. It's not new for television, but they...
Oh, God, especially, well, and I know it's not a Netflix show, but, like, there are so many Netflix shows that end in cliffhangers and got canceled. So, like, ending in a cliffhanger doesn't mean anything.
No. These days, it is as much a gimmick to get you coming back for another season as it is to be like, please renew our show because, hey, we did a cool cliffhanger. It's almost like that last point of begging the studio to renew it. And I think Halo will get at least one more season. And they might, I mean, the problem with Halo is that really, I don't know if you know this, but like, well, you do know, you played all the games. Like, really, it doesn't finish the fight.
Them.
Okay. Well, the whole tagline of Halo 3 was finish the fight. They don't finish the fight until the end of Halo 3. So we're looking at least three more seasons if they do one game per season, which they could absolutely do if they don't want to meander. Eventually, they got to just, you know, pull off the Band-Aid and start adapting the games. But yeah, like they, to in order to tell a complete story that they've set up with the Covenant and what they want to do, you do have to get through three games to finish that story, the story they're setting up. They could condense it a little bit, but I think from a more, like when you look at sci-fi, if you're looking for a more interesting story, where the interesting story comes into play is from, you know, the later half of the first game leading into the second and third, as they start to explore the mythology of the rings, what makes the Covenant work, why they want to destroy humanity, what they're doing. You get more interesting characters on the side of the Covenant. I think if you're a fan of Halo, this is what we're getting for an adaptation of Halo. Like we were talking about this pre-show. Like, I don't think we get another shot at a Halo adaptation at this scale. So that's where I think it's more important for fans of Halo to get a season three, because it's like, okay, you've built up your own timeline through these first two seasons. Now give us the video game and that'll be great. And there's not to say there's no good stuff in these seasons. Like, they have their moments. There's a lot of great action. Eventually Master Chief gets his armor on and he does Spartan things, and that's great to see. But really, we want to see like boots on the ground, Halo. Let's do this thing.
I just have to, whether you want to keep this in the show or not, totally your call, but I just have to like humble brag about my daughter right now, because we've been sleep training her and she's doing amazing. But I just saw her wake up on the camera and pick up her soother and put it into her mouth. And I've never seen her do that before. So yeah, she is self-soothing like mad right now. And I am such a proud mama. So you can cut that out.
No, I can leave that in, because honestly, that's an accomplishment. That's awesome.
It is. She's only 6 months old, brushes off shoulders.
Man. Sometimes I struggle to get my soother in and I'm like 37. Right? So.
Yeah, anyway, so yeah, Halo. So overall, we are hoping for a season three, because otherwise the show's kind of a thumbs down is the vibe I'm getting.
Like, or a shrug. Like, I'd say three quarters of it is fine, but like, there's
such a Ryan reaction. It's like, you cannot badmouth Halo, and so
no,
if it was anything else, it'd be thumbs down, but you know, because it's Halo, it gets a default shrug.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. It's a hard one to adapt, because it is very much sort of, you know, I had said generic sci-fi, but it is kind of just generic. It's kind of generic sci-fi, especially leading into the games where they do sort of flesh out more of the interesting mythology. But so far it is just, super strong people in suits fighting aliens occasionally, but also arguing a lot with politicians. It's like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Which is like all the stuff that people hated about like the first Star Wars prequel movie. Nah, so much politics, too much talking, so boring.
Yeah. And some of the talking's fine. Like it's not all bad. I'd say it's like half of it could have been sort of sped along through the moments of like, okay, like you guys are clearly having these moments where you're doubting the Master Chief, which is an odd one to see, because like, you know, in the video games, no one doubts the Chief,
he's
right?
Master Chief, yeah.
Yeah, but in the show, I guess they wanted to build more tension between these characters, so I get their approach. But yeah, I'd say like half of it is like really good Halo, good Halo stuff, and then the other half is like, you know, this was a writing room trying to figure out how to adapt this, and I get it. You have to have more to your show than just Halo stuff, but it is a Halo show, so like,
Yeah, I'm sure they'll get there, hopefully, this season, and then they'll get renewed at least for one more, but I don't know. It doesn't sound very promising right now, I'll be honest.
I'll finish this season, and I will provide a very short update, basically yay or nay, as to whether they, you know... But my understanding is that the last three episodes do not sort of pull up, you know? So...
Oh, no.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
We have another sequel to talk about, but this one is actually a game. We got a little bit further into Alan Wake 2, and we've got some mechanics to talk about. And so we're going to keep this as spoiler-free as possible. But that being said, we are both probably somewhere between like 5 and 10 hours into the game. So there will be some kind of light spoilers, at least about kind of vaguely what's going on. I think we're both at the point now where we have unlocked all the mechanics of the game. So that's why we wanted to talk about it before we'd actually finished the game. So if you are going spoiler free on Alan Wake 2, maybe fast forward a little bit. Ryan is always awesome and puts timestamps in our show notes. So you can head on over to thegamersin.com in order to actually see our, or sorry, no, thegamersin.com. What am I even saying? Gamersinpodcast.com for our show notes and timestamps if you're trying to avoid spoilers on Alan Wake 2. So, that being said, I really, really like Alan Wake, and I found it very, very difficult to get into Alan Wake 2, only because, like, the first few chapters, you're not playing as Alan, and then also, my sleep is so precious. Like, I've been getting so little of it, and now she's sleeping much better, much longer through the night, which is great. But earlier on, I couldn't play it because it was too scary. It was like, just, it gave me like anxiety and adrenaline rushes and like all of that stuff. And I'm like, I can't play that from like 9 p.m. to midnight because then I'll never fall asleep and she's going to be up at like 6. So yeah, I've found it really, I've really struggled to find time and to be able to actually get further into Alan Wake 2. But I have now gotten to the point, like I say, that I think I've unlocked all of the mechanics. And yeah, so we're going to have a little bit of a chat about it. So I think, Ryan, you and I are at about the same place. I think we figured out I might be a touch further, but not much.
Yeah, yeah. There is a moment where you switch from playing as Saga to unlocking and playing as unlocking is the wrong word. You play as Alan Wake. It basically, I think it shifts backwards, like the timeline. Like,
yeah. So I did want to talk about like Alan's introduction, because like basically you have one boss fight as Saga. You kind of like, you have your first like day night moment in Bright Falls as her, and it's in the present, it's in 2023. Yeah, 2023, yeah. That's right. Yeah. And then you come across Alan, and then it switches over to him, and it's like a flashback to his time in the dark place, which is like, I don't know if I love. It's kind of, and I know that this one like narrative game of the year, and it's interesting, but it's complicated as fuck, and I'm like, I'm just having trouble. And again, and I played, like I say, I played the first like chapter and a half probably months ago, and then, you know, just picked it up again this last week, and so I hadn't really remembered too much of what had happened, and I, you know, couldn't even remember. It took me so long. I would like rewatch tutorials and like couldn't remember my controls. I was just like, oh my god, I've been away from this game for too long. And yeah, so like, I don't know, I just the whole narrative seems really disjointed and confusing, because it's, you're not just playing as two different characters, but you're playing as two different characters at two different moments in time, even, right? Because the Alan is the flashback to like 13 years earlier. So I don't know, like, I don't love it. But that being said, I haven't seen too much of the dark place. I think I've only played through two chapters in there. So there might be more to it that makes it more like interesting, but I just find it too like self-referential and like intentionally convoluted. Does that make sense?
Like it's just yeah.
too much, like too much self-references, too much like story within a story within a story stuff, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's bordering on for me, like when movies get multiversey or like super time travel-y and they have a whole bunch of different timelines and stuff. And I'm just like, oh my God, like, do we have like, that's just the stuff that melts my brain, and not in a fun way, in a, like, you're just trying to be smart and I don't like it way.
Yeah. And I do. I felt that struggle as well, because I, the whole game has multiple characters sort of talking over the moments of gameplay. Not only do you have Saga sort of her, as she talks to herself and she works through her thoughts, you do, that is represented in the game as her talking over what's happening, but you mm-hmm. also have Alan Wake sort of popping in, and it's, he's not saying anything, he's being cryptic, he's like writing a novel, and he's writing one of those like cheesy you know, pop culture novels that were like, he enters the room as a detective would, looking at all the corners or whatever, you know. But it's better than that, of course, but because that's the first thing that I could think of. But like, it has those layers to it. So as you said, it kind of feels like a multiverse. It's not quite a multiverse. It's kind of, there's just these layers. There's these different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Universes that are happening. There's the, I don't even know. What is it? You said the dark place. Yeah.
The dark place. Yeah.
So there is this like limbo where Alan Wake is. And as you said, like the game, once Alan Wake returns to the present 12 years, which is the exact timelines of when Alan Wake came out originally to now, mm-hmm. I did kind of
like that little nod, yeah. right? Like that, hey, Alan Wake's been missing for 12, 13 years, whatever. Yes. And that's how long it's taken us to make a sequel. I was like, oh, like I did kind of like that little like wink and nod to the timeline and how it, like, I mean, how it makes sense. Like, he's been stuck under the lake.
Yes. Yeah. And I really enjoyed that as well. I felt like that was a nice nod, as you said, to sort of the timelines between these two releases in the real world. And I think they continue to play with that. There are moments of live action. So there are moments of live action, and I had to look this up.
That threw me off so much. I was like, wait, what is happening? But there are live action cinematics very similar to Quantum Break, except not as long. Like Quantum Break, we're like 22 minute like TV shows. This was like probably, I want to say like maybe 5 minutes, but there was no interaction. Like you couldn't choose. And that was the thing that bugged me, that like, I really wish that it was more like those Netflix shows that I can't remember what it was called. But like, it was the interactive TV show where it was like a choose your own adventure.
Yes.
Like, yeah. I wish you could somehow interact with something. So you're not just sitting there watching this super duper long cutscene. But yeah, when it was flipped to live action, I was like, what's going on?
Yeah, and I don't know if it was my setup, but I'm pretty sure the Alan Wake actor is not the voice actor, so they're dubbing over what he's saying. I don't know if you got that.
Possibly.
I don't know if you felt that, but I think it is a different...
I didn't really notice, but that doesn't mean it wasn't happening.
Yeah, I don't know. It could be my setup, and maybe it wasn't like perfect one-to-one, but... The live action stuff, it kind of leans into the fact that there is this, like, there's this unknown thing happening. There's some weirdness happening. And I think the, like, where Control sort of had it hanging around in the background, all the weirdness, like it was there, but it wasn't like the sole focus. Like you were running through a lot of weird shit in that game. But mm-hmm. everything was weird. And I think the difference here with Alan Wake 2 is that there is a lot of normal going on as you're walking through these towns, and then weird kind of just like pops up in your face. You know?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, even the character of Saga herself with her whole mind palace thing is, I'm just like, what is happening. And maybe it's some mental trick that I don't, that I'm not familiar with, but like, I don't know. It just seemed like she's like psychic or something, sure, you know? Yeah. Cause it, and I feel like we talked about this when we first talked about Alan Wake too, a couple months ago, where it's just like, she does the like profiling thing, which like obviously is a real thing the FBI does. But it's like, it gives her information that she would have no way to know, you know, like she just, yeah. And it's not like, oh, well, he spent a lot of time down at the river, so maybe I should go look for his fishing boat or something, you know, like it's not stuff like that. It's like she actually has like visions of things that are happening and yet thinks that that's totally normal. Like, I don't know. Like, I think the fact that Saga is supposed to be like the normal FBI one, at least that's how she perceives herself. And that's kind of what we're told right off the beginning. But then she's so weird. Like, but why?
Yeah.
How do you think this is normal?
So at first it felt like, oh, this is just the game trying to capture sort of the idea and the feeling of like intuition. Like you have that gut feeling and then they're giving you
giving
the player that visual representation of that. But as you said, it goes a step further and like kind of goes into the control aspect, where control literally had an entity talking to the main character. And this feels very reminiscent of that. And maybe further on in the game, it like gets to a point where it's like, yeah, it turns out it was, I don't know, the spirit or whatever talking to her.
Something's going to have to be explained. Cause I mean, obviously we're not very far. They've been dropping all kinds of hints and stuff about like things going on with her, things going on with her daughter. And so, you know, like, I'm sure that there's going to be more explanation coming. Like, Alan Wake is very much a don't tell you everything off the start type of a game and type of a universe. So I get that. But yeah, I think, so far I just kind of was like head scratchy with a lot of things going on. And the actual like mechanic of, I think I kind of thought that you'd almost be able to like choose your character.
Oh yeah.
Instead of like, basically Alan playing as Alan and playing as Saga are like totally separate. Like there is no choice. It's like she's playing through stuff in the present in Bright Falls and he is remembering his memories.
Yeah. He's going through what happened to him in the dark place and how he escaped. So I assume eventually we'll catch up to him in the real world, but I'd imagine that the game will continue to sort of hand off back and forth between these characters.
Yeah, yeah.
There will not be a choice. It's a very narrative driven game, but I'm curious, like, so now that we've kind of gotten through a couple of Alan Wake chapters and we've unlocked sort of his unique gameplay approaches, and I had said to you, like, he has sort of his own mind palace stuff where...
Mm-hmm. He goes to the writer's room.
Yeah. Which is also is a very interesting way to sort of like describe it. He has this writer's room. But I thought it was a really interesting way of incorporating his character as a writer and how he affects the dark places by writing. And you and it's not a very complex system, but as a writer you can change whole rooms. Like it's very scripted in what you can do, but you can change what is happening in a room to allow you to progress by writing this manuscript that you're working on that directly affects the dark place.
Which, like, I mean, just I maybe I'm not far enough along for that concept to be fully explained, but I'm like, why don't you just write down like Alan looked at the wall, there was a door, it led out of the dark place, the end.
Oh yeah, that's true. You know, this just
start, you know, you're going just... through jumping through all these hoops. Like, I mean, at this point I'm writing a story about like a missing FBI agent or something, and I'm like, I'm going through this and I'm like, why doesn't he just write a door in the wall that gets him out?
That'd be a very short game,
right?
Alan Wake wrote that there was a door, the end. There was the halo, the end. You know, how are you else are you going to get two seasons out of this, Jocelyn? I don't know. You're absolutely right. Like, I think there are like some hand wavy constraints to allow to sort of explain why this gameplay makes sense in the moment, but doesn't allow you to sort of skip to the end. Like the Dark Place as an entity wants to keep Alan Wake there. So I think there's a limit to how much he can affect it. But I thought it was a really cool way to sort of incorporate the character as a writer directly into the gameplay, because the first game didn't have that. You were a dude running around with a flashlight and a gun,
right?
You know, killing shadows,
finding pages, pages that had already been written,
So it was a neat way to incorporate it, and there was also he has these light puzzles where you're walking around with, I guess it's a lamp, but it kind of reminded me of like an Emmy, like an award statue. Every time I saw it. And it's kind of a basic puzzle mechanic where he is, you know, taking light from one light source to the next.
And when he either lights up the world or takes the light away, it changes what the world looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. And then with less light, there are more aggressive shadow people.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that? You probably weren't too stoked about that.
I mean, like, okay, so I do kind of want to talk about the shadow people a little bit, because I'm not sure if it's like my computer or like the upgrade in like graphics and things, but like they seem a lot more smoky than they were last time. And I am really struggling with the combat of the game to figure out when they are actually like just shadows and when they're going to like turn into real people that you have to shoot, because there's basically so far two kinds of shadow enemies. And the first kind, you burn them with your flashlight and they disappear. And the second kind, you burn them with your flashlight and their like protection disappears. And then there's a person underneath that you have to fight, that's like possessed. And I'm really, really struggling, whether it's my graphic settings or just their kind of choices with how they're representing these enemies. But I'm really struggling with that part of the combat, is like realizing that it's an enemy that's still going to come at me after I burned it with my flashlight. So, and I got to say, like, it was true of the first game, it's true of the second game. The combat is not where Alan Wake shines at all. Like it's fine, and I get why you wanted to put some sort of combat in it. But I would almost rather like a stealth type game where you're meant to avoid and you can't fight and you're just trying to get from like light source to light source. I feel like I would rather that.
Yeah. And it's so crazy, because I do agree with you in the sense that the combat is not my favorite part of this. My favorite part is sort of the storytelling, and
my favorite part is figuring things out, is trying to understand what is going on, because it is such a crazy mind-bendy premise that I do find it very interesting. I'm just not a huge fan of how they implemented like the Alan versus Saga to have the two different like characters to play. But in terms of the actual story itself, I do find like the universe really interesting, and I want to know what happened to Alan, and what's going on in the present. And so maybe that's why I don't like the switching mechanic, is like, I want to know, or like right now, I want to know what's going on in the present, and they're making me play Alan stuff, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cause there is this, like, there is this overarching story, like literally there's a character at the start of the game that is there, and it's an actor that you and I both know, is Sean Ashmore, I think it is, and he's there, and it's like, oh great, they got him in this game, like I really enjoy him and his other projects. And then he just disappears, literally disappears, like he's gone, and the characters are like, did that character just disappear? Like the other characters, like, did the captain just disappear, or the sheriff, or whatever? And they're like, well, that's weird. That probably has something to do with everything. You think, you know?
It's
like, so we don't know what's happening there. Like, there's a lot of mystery that is sort of...
Well, there's a lot of mystery and there's a lot of interest. And I feel like it's because I already know the outcome of Alan's story, right? He escapes. He gets back to the present. So I'm like, I care so much less about what happened to him and his, like, trials and tribulations in the Dark Place. I want to go save Sean Ashmore. I want to figure out who the cultists are and, you know, like what's going on in Bright Falls. Like that to me is where the interest lies. And obviously it's all tied up with, you know, Alan Wake and the Dark Place and everything else and all the stuff that was going on in Control. But like, I just have very little interest in how Alan got out. Like, I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. As you said, we already know.
Yeah. We already know he did get out. So there's no suspense there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess my biggest issue with the game, and I know, as you said, it won best narrative and I'm feeling that, I get it. But, coming off of Control, which had very good combat, like it was the best part of that game alongside the narrative and the characters and the universe, which, you know, bleeds into this game as well. Like you have a lot, you have literally the Control Bureau or
Federal
whatever.
Bureau of Control. Yeah.
Yeah.
The FEC. And,
the combat in this, as you said, is just, it feels like it's there, but it's not like the draw. It's not the most entertaining thing to do. Like, I think you and I both got stuck on a boss fight, the final boss fight that Saga is a part of.
Of Saga Story, yeah.
Yeah, before we switch over to Alan Wake. And I'm pretty sure it was glitched for both of us.
Yeah, the thing that really bugged me was that, like, it just glitched out. It was the, like, final time. First of all, you can't save. You have to, like, actually get to a save point, just like the first game. So you go through this fight where you have to make the boss retreat many times. I want to say in total it was like 5 or 6 times. And in the end, you go into like the center of the area, and he like turns from, because he's corporeal, but he turns like incorporeal and like whooshes across the area towards you. And the first time, he like slammed me up against a rock, but then I like fell into the fetal position between the rock and a tree, and my character just got stuck there. It was so infuriating. And there was a certain angle where it looked like my character was almost ready to stand up, and the boss just kept coming over to me and like stomping on me, but like not doing any damage. Like I wasn't dead. I could go to my mind place, like everything, but I just couldn't get out from between the tree and the rock. So I went in through a separate entrance the second time, and almost the same thing happened, but I was able to like jiggle my way out of the way because it wasn't, there was no tree. It was just like a couple of rocks. So, but yeah, like the same thing happened. I was like, oh my God, don't glitch out. Because it's like, you know, you have to go back and replay like a 10 to 15 minute, you know, encounter from the last autosave area. And, you know, like my time is very precious now. You know, I have a 2-hour nap window. I don't want to replay 15 minutes of stuff because of glitches, you know?
Yeah, no, that's fair. Like for sure. And I also got stuck in that boss fight where I felt like I was stuck in a combat loop and I just ended up dying. And I was like, okay, what am I missing here? And then I did it again. And it was like, oh, I'm pretty sure I fought the boss off 3 times. And then it triggered the cutscene to complete the boss fight. Like, cause it didn't feel like I was, kept getting the tooltip of like, hey, if you shoot the guy, you'll do damage after you shoot at him. And I was like, yeah, but I'm doing that. And he keeps coming back. So like, what do you want? There's no health bar. Cause of course it's like a immersive narrative game experience where there's little to no UI. But again, like I keep coming back to the story, the puzzles, like moving the narrative forward, like that's been the most interesting part.
It makes the combat worth it, in my opinion.
100%. Yeah, it does make the combat worth it. And I think when we return, like it won't be next week, but when we return to the game and we have concluded the story, I do hope that we are at that point where everybody else was when they played this of like, oh my God, yes, I see it. Best narrative.
Yeah. Well, we are like we're at the very beginning of Saga Story. We're at the very beginning of Alan's story, like even a few chapters in. I think there's, I want to say 19. I remember looking it up originally. I think there's 19 chapters altogether. And so, you know, like I've maybe completed 4. Like there's still a whole lot of story to go. But yeah, I'm just I think the mechanics, it's interesting how they tried to make the characters just the same, only different. But yeah, I think, the other thing I wanted to mention, the other mechanic I came across with Saga was those nursery rhymes. Have you done many of those?
Yes. Yeah. Which is a direct tie. I thought
those were actually kind of interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are, yeah, those were set up by the Bureau of Control. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that stuff, again, like I think all of the stuff where you're exploring the area and Saga's stuff felt more open as opposed to Alan Wake's stuff is a little more corridor focused. And even when Alan Wake's stuff is a little more open, it still feels like you're being funneled into the right corridor to progress the story. But Saga's had like a whole map and you can kind of explore around and stuff and discover these little puzzles. And I think, yeah, it just leans into more of what we've been enjoying, which is the narrative and the sort of the mystery. And I think exploring more about the Federal Bureau of Control is very cool because it's going to be a while before we get a Control 2. So,
yeah.
Yeah. No, I think there's lots to love here. And the combat, you know, it's fine. Like, it's not the worst combat I've ever played. It's just, it's not as fun and snappy as Control was. Like you're very, this is a survival horror game. You're very vulnerable. Yeah. And I get that, but like, that's not my favorite type of combat. This is not Resident Evil where you've got many different weapons at your disposal and you've got a machine gun and a grenade launcher and everything. It's like, no, you have a flashlight and a handgun.
Yeah, and I think eventually that's going to change. So, sure. Because, you know, I've also started unlocking words of power as Alan.
Yes.
Called words of power? Yeah. And some of those reference other weapons, flare guns and shotguns and things like that. So I think there are more weapons to come, which maybe will make the combat more interesting. I think right now, like you say, it's just a flashlight and a handgun, and that gets really pigeonholy and boring pretty quickly. So, but we'll have to see. I mean, you know, all of this is subject to change once we get further into the game. It's very much like initial impressions of mechanics and stuff. So I'm sure in the next like month or so, we'll probably be able to actually finish up the narrative. And then, yeah, I look forward to having that spoilerific chat with you. But yeah, it'll be a little while from now, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to see if they get to the Halo. I think that's what we're trying to say.
Yeah, exactly. Wanted to give a shout out to some of our patrons, Ocularis, Wicked Kitten, and Tyson. Thank you guys so much for supporting us over at patreon.com/thegamersin. We don't currently have a game club going, but we will be getting something going sometime, probably more so in the summer. So yeah, if you have suggestions or anything like that, or if you want to run a game club, head on over to bit.ly/TGI Discord and let us know. And as always, if you do want to support the show, if you want to support Ryan and I, that is patreon.com/thegamersin. That brings us to the news this week. Apple is opening up the App Store to allow retro game emulators on the platform, which is something they did not do before. They were very much banned along with a lot of other kinds of apps, but Apple is, I mean, this is layoffs and lawsuits. Apple has been very involved with, I'm totally blanking on it now, but regulatory board basically saying they have a monopoly and they need to not be like they have been. They need to change things up. They need to be more open. And so, yeah, this is one in a series of steps to kind of open up the App Store a little more, open up the platform.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen a lot of sort of arguments on why this is being done now. And you're right. It does stem from the fact that they've garnered a lot of attention from the European, I don't know the organization, but in Europe there's been a lot of like focus on Apple as a big, you know, sort of a monopoly, I guess, of the digital.
Yeah, okay, so the DOJ in the States filed an antitrust lawsuit against Apple.
Yes. Yeah, which is sort of following up on what Europe did, and Europe made, the reason the new iPhones have are using USB-C and not Lightning is because of what Europe did with their sort of, I don't even know if it's a lawsuit, but I guess lawsuit's the easiest way to put it, like against Apple to basically say, hey, like you need to be more open, starting with removing the fact that you have a proprietary connector on all your devices. So a lot of devices you buy from Apple now are USB-C. And they brought that change around the world, not just to Europe, where it would have been against the law to sell a requirement. So this is a similar approach where Apple is being accused of being a closed garden, which it is. It is an app store that is managed by Apple and they take their cut. And in Europe, they're opening it up. This is specifically to Europe, coming with the new iOS, I think the current version, but it's going to be patched, I think, soon, where it'll allow you to download and install third-party app stores via a website or whatever, and you can install those app stores and then download apps from there. And some have said that this approach of is kind of twofold to bring retro game emulators in as an app that, as you said, was traditionally banned and did not make it through App Store review. Bringing these retro game emulators onto the App Store removes maybe an incentive for folks to go out and get a third party store if they want emulators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't have to jailbreak your phone anymore.
Yeah. And this is a worldwide thing. This isn't just in Europe that they are bringing retro game emulators. They're allowing. Apple's not bringing them.
Yeah.
But it also gives them something to point to of like, hey, look, like we don't block these things. Like they're trying to point to things that they're no longer blocking. That doesn't mean the DOJ and other regulatory bodies don't have other issues with Apple, but I think Apple's trying to remove the easy ones, you know, where it's like, okay, let's allow emulators in and let's allow another one was super apps, quote unquote, where you could have stores games with it, apps within apps, where it's like Netflix is a great one where with Netflix, they have the game subscription. You have to go into the App Store and download the game separately and sign in through Netflix. Theoretically, with this change, you would be able to install the game through the Netflix app and play it that way. So they're making small changes, I think, that, yes, regulators have pointed to as like, hey, this is you sort of controlling the platform too much. But Apple is very much not wiggling on other stuff, which I think is like, it's more of like a, hey, don't look at this hand. Look at this hand, which is we're allowing emulators in. See, we're making changes, but there are bigger things that I think regulatory bodies have issues with, like the percentage of what they're taking and denying specific apps. And it's a whole, I think this is just like, when will we, I don't even know when we'll see emulators come in. Who's to say they'll even make it through the review process or whether or not there are other issues with emulators, because again, like with emulators, like, well, what are you playing on them? It's like, well, you're not shoving a GBA cart into your iPhone, you know, like you were playing ROMs. So how that works, how Apple will look at that, like obviously the Apple review team isn't putting ROMs onto their iPhones. I don't know. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes, but I think it is Apple giving in a little to try to point to of like, hey, see, we changed, man, we're good. Like, but there's other stuff that's being pointed to as like, no, you need to do more, you know? So it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of going forward, Xbox has, I guess, kind of in a roundabout way announced that they are going ahead with a next-gen console. So there was an internal email made available or acquired by a media outlet that now Microsoft has verified that it is real. And basically they're saying, yes, we are making a next-gen console. We are doing the thing. So hooray, Xbox.
Yeah, this, if it were any other company like Sony or Nintendo, it'd be like, well, this is non-news. But I think that the fact that Xbox has to come out and say this is kind of shows where they are as a platform for consoles and how they've approached this generation going forward. But yeah, like I expected that there would be another Xbox, and Xbox has said before that they're going to do another Xbox. But this is them once again confirming that, hey, if you're buying into the Xbox ecosystem, there's going to be more Xbox for you coming soon. I think they're saying, like, leaks have suggested that 2028 would be the next year, which is crazy to think about. I know these consoles launched in 2020. So Yeah, to think that we got 4 more years of these boxes, that seems like a long time.
Yeah, I feel like if we're looking at 2028 launches for like PlayStation 6 and Xbox, whatever it's going to be called, I feel like that might be incentive enough for me to buy the in-between version, the 0.5. Because normally I don't. Normally I just, you know, make do with my like launch version and stick with it and then get the new one when the new one comes out. But yeah, I might actually get a 0.5 this time.
Yeah, I think that I think a 0.5 is at this stage, it's an interesting approach because it kind of comes down to, I think we talked about the 0.5s before, where it's like, is there enough of a shift to warrant the purchase? Like with the other 0.5s, it was like the move from 1080p to 4K. And I think what the 0.5 is going to offer this time is, you know, locked in 60 frames as opposed to choosing between performance and, you know, quality modes, or even having the option for a performance mode. You know, that might be exclusive to the 0.5 step up. So, and I mean, for me, the 0.5, I look at what could be offered and the choice between the PlayStation 0.5 and the Xbox 0.5, I probably lean more towards the PlayStation solely due to the fact that they have their first party titles and they seem to have more of them. I don't know if I can justify buying two new consoles.
2.5s, yeah.
Yeah. You know, but we'll have to see. Like, I think it really comes down to, because I already have the system that will play those games in the original PS5 and the Xbox Series X, it comes down to how do the games actually differ on those 0.5s. A whole new generation is a whole other story, because of course you're going to look at those as like, okay, like you need them. Although I guess there was overlap, so we'll probably have overlap again. But the best way to play them was on the next generation of consoles. So it just, all that to be said, like everything's kind of blending together. It's becoming more, it's becoming less of like cut off of this generation onto the next. If you want to play those games, you have to buy the box. And I know that's how Nintendo has done it traditionally and will likely continue to do it. But Xbox and PlayStation seem to be more focusing on like, hey, we're going to have some overlap.
Yeah, they're blurring the lines.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's good for consumers. It gives us time to move to the next generation. It doesn't feel like we have to move right away. And I don't think it affected the bottom line because both those consoles were tough to buy right at launch.
I was going to say, like, if anything, it feels like a supply chain choice, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Don't force people onto a new platform when you're not 100% sure that your entire audience can actually get that platform into their house, right? Like, that's only going to hurt your game sales if you can't keep up with demand, so...
Yeah, and those business decisions were made, like, I'm sure before, you know, COVID hit, because they did launch the consoles during the pandemic in the year it started, 2020. So, like, to have that overlap, I think, was good, because I know there, as you said, there was supply constraints just due to the pandemic, let alone trying to build a new box in secrecy to have enough units to sell millions right at launch. Like, they could not meet demand. We'll see what happens, but it's sort of a non-news story, but it's good to see Xbox confirming that, like, hey, there's more coming. And I'm sure there will be 0.5s and special editions and all that fun stuff to look at before we have to buy a next gen console.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the III Indie Game Showcase. I had a quick look at this and there was nothing that really caught my eye, but Ryan, you've got a couple that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, there were three that sort of jumped out at me. This event, I had seen it pop up a couple times in my feed, but then there was chatter in the Discord of like, is there an event going on that I don't know of? Because there were trailers being dropped and sort of reactions and stuff. And there was, it's, as you said, the III Indie Game Showcase, and they sort of build it as like, hey, 30 plus trailers, no ads. Let's see how this goes.
No ads, but every trailer is an ad.
Well, that's the kicker, right? So yeah, it's all ads, but it's the ads we want to see.
Yeah, all ads, but no extra ads. Don't worry.
Yeah, we don't. We're not trying to sell you seasons of Diablo 4 or razors. It's just indies. although, funny enough, the ones I'm going to talk about that kind of stood out to me are all either indies based on AAA properties or past AAA properties, or an indie to probably, or a sequel to probably one of the biggest indies out there. So the first one, really quickly, Vampire Survivors is coming to PlayStation. It's funny because I thought it was already there, but now it's everywhere now. It's on PlayStation. They also announced Contra DLC, which is just called Operation Guns. So now there are guns in Vampire Survivors. and I just have to hand it to Konami that is just more than happy to hand out their IP to these sort of DLC cameos and collaborations as opposed to like developing their own new products. Although I don't think people are clamoring for a new Contra. So I do like the sort of imagination that is being displayed here where it's like, hey, what if we took Vampire Survivors and did a Contra DLC? Like that's, I did not see that coming.
Yeah, that's kind of out of left field, but I literally thought you forgot a comma.
Yeah.
Like Vampire Survivors and then comma Contra.
Yeah, Contra DLC. No, it's Contra is coming to Vampire Survivors. They announced a sequel to Slay the Spire. So we're getting Slay the Spire 2. We'll be launching in early access in 2025. Slay the Spire was one of those games. It was like highly regarded as a great card battler roguelike. But didn't have the greatest art style. I know that was a lot of the critiques it got. Is like the game is fantastic, but the art style leaves a bit to be desired. It looks like they've taken that concept from the first one and really worked on the art style to build it up. Like the trailer looks, I don't think the trailer is like gameplay, but it looks like they've taken that style and ran with it. And I think it looks a lot better. So I'm looking forward to seeing that one. And we didn't talk about it on the show, but there was a big story of how Evil Empire and I think it's Motion Twin was moving away from Dead Cells. Dead Cells was doing very well with all its DLC. Most of it was handled by Evil Empire. We did talk about the Castlevania DLC on the show. And they just announced like, hey, we're done with Dead Cells. We know it's incredibly popular, but Motion Twin is moving on to a new project. And we've got something cooking at Evil Empire. And we finally got that unveiled, which is The Rogue Prince of Persia, which is a roguelite Prince of Persia game. And it looks pretty cool.
So you're a fan of Prince of Persia anyway, right?
I have enjoyed Prince of Persia in the past. I don't know. Like for me, it's like in this case, the Prince of Persia thing is cool, but I really enjoyed a lot of what Evil Empire was doing with Dead Cells. And I don't think the screenshots for this game do it justice. I think you have to see it in motion to really get a feel for it, because I saw the screenshots in Discord and on news sites and I was like, I don't know. The art style kind of goes for like this almost like a paintery look, like a sort of like a, I don't know. I know there's a specific word for it, but like a vase art, like Greek vase art. I know it's not Greece in this case, but it's just had this like,
yeah. Is it Persia?
Yes. It is. Some would say he's a prince of Persia. So yeah, yes, that makes sense. So it has this, but then when you see it in motion, it has this very like specific visual style and movement. And I think that's where I'm like, okay, this is really interesting. And I can't wait to play. Cause that was the big thing about Dead Cells is like, yes, it had a unique art style, but what really made it shine was like the feeling of controlling it. And this game looks like it would be fun to control. I mean, I know like you got to get your hands on it and actually try it, but like if it looks as fun, if it plays as fun as it looks, like I'm looking forward to it. And we won't have long to wait because it's launching in early access in May. So it's just around the corner. And I I'm pretty sure I'm going to pick this one up and try it at its early access launch. So that will be fun.
And finally, tonight, we got a story trailer for Star Wars Outlaws, which is coming August 30th this year. And I mean, I'm not a huge Star Wars person, but I know you're a fan. So are you looking forward to picking this up? I mean, to me, it looked like there was enough stuff that was like recognizable Star Wars, but there was also a lot of stuff that kind of looked like new, but fit. And again, I don't know a ton about the Star Wars universe, but just like from what I know of Star Wars, it looked pretty interesting, which is really saying something, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, because it's focusing a lot on the... So a lot of focus for Star Wars video games really, really put a spotlight on the Jedi and lightsabers and the Force, yeah, and that kind of combat. That being said, like, I don't know if that will be completely missing from Star Wars Outlaws, but these trailers really put forward this idea of like, hey, you are
People too.
yeah. You are a rogue. You are doing roguish things. You are part of, you're an outlaw and you're on the Outer Rim. And the whole premise is like, hey, the Empire is busy with this, you know, this little rebellion that's going on, you know, maybe not six films, you know, highlighting the rebellion. But now we're going to focus on like what happens when, you know, Mom and Dad are fighting, like, we're going to go off and do some shit, you know? And I think it's a really cool concept because it allows you to play in this world without getting bogged down with, A, having to connect to the overarching story. Like, I think Jedi Fallen Order and Jedi Survivor was really trapped in this world of, like, whatever we do, because we are Jedi and dealing with the Force, we have to adhere to the movies that came before and the movies that came after, and we're kind of stuck in that period. With Star Wars Outlaws, like, we can kind of just have fun in this playground because we're not worried about, you know, being a Jedi, because the Jedis are all supposed to be gone, killed off. And when you introduce a Jedi in this era, it's like, well, shit, why wasn't this person here helping in XYZ events? You know, like, we got to come up with lore gymnastics to figure it out. But in this case, it's just like, hey, what if we took a Han Solo character type and made a bunch of them and had some fun with it? And I'm sure Han Solo will be in the game as a cameo. I think even he might be in the trailer, to be honest. There was a
Carbonite moment. Yeah. I don't know if that was actually Han Solo in the Carbonite or somebody else, but there was definitely a Carbonite moment.
Yeah, it did actually, you know, as we're talking through it, like I feel like that was either meant as like a nod, but yeah, it really felt like that was Han Solo. So maybe he's in the game. We already saw it. Yeah. oh yeah, it is the Han Solo cameo. yeah, so there he is. You know, now that I'm looking at it very much closer, it's like that is the classic Han Solo in Carbonite. So it's weird that they put that in the trailer now that I'm thinking about it. Like, that feels like a moment that they might want to preserve.
Yeah, you would think that they would want to have that be an Easter egg, right?
Yeah. So maybe the fact that they showed it in the trailer means there's more. Maybe. Star Wars likes its cameos. So maybe we get some other characters show up, but you know, that all being said, like they're still going to have the Empire there. They might avoid like the Jedi and the Force, but I feel like the Empire will play like a huge role. But
well, yeah, because the Empire is like the government, the cops, right? Like, yes. And you're the outlaws, so you can't be an outlaw without laws.
Yeah, I think there will definitely be some conflict there. But the trailer, they said this is a story trailer. Like It didn't feel like a lot of... there were snippets of gameplay, but this is from Massive, so you know it's going to have like somewhat... It's going to have an open world. I'm sure there will be towers to climb and checkpoints to unlock. But the big news is that it's coming out August 30th, which is an interesting sort of time frame to release a game, because usually games like this are either like fall or February. You know, so I'm kind of excited. A late summer release sounds pretty good.
Well, we'll have to let you guys know what we think of it when we get there. I mean, August seems so far away. We get Frostpunk before that, which I'm very excited about. But yeah, it feels like it's it's kind of quiet. We're in a bit of a lull right now.
Yeah, like we talked a bit about this. I think that there are a lot of games coming out, but it's a wide variety of genres. And the releases right now might not be sparking our interest, but you know, there are a lot of games coming out, but they're kind of the genres are all over the place, you know? Like I feel like last year had a lot of games because there were a lot of games coming out, but they were like
more popular genres or like,
yeah. I think we're getting games, but it has slowed down a bit. I think the lack of Nintendo and Xbox stuff, you know, we still haven't seen what Xbox, we still haven't seen a lot from Xbox. We haven't seen a ton from Nintendo, and Sony hasn't released, like, again, like the major platform holders, I think, are taking a bit of a break, you know, like, we'll see. We'll see how this year shakes out. But I think we're going to have some winners this year for sure.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, we will be covering all of those on future episodes. So if you would like to join the conversation, head on over to bit.ly/TGI Discord. You can also visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at Joss Plays, Ryan is Dar Murphy, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. Thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn. Remember, tune in next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.